We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, time now for What's Trending.
A look at the top trending headlines of the day.
Oh my God.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
For me, it's just having a 5.5 game lead with 24 more games to go. That's all I care about, is winning this division and making it to the playoffs. So if I have to keep putting numbers up, I'll keep doing it. But I think we've got a pretty good team around me to be able to take some pressure off.
That's Braves first baseman Freddie Freeman. When he was asked about the MVP vote, he says, look, I'm all about this division race right now. And the Braves are have a 5.5 game lead here on the, what is today, the second day of September. And the Braves with a 5.5 game lead. Beat up on the White Sox yesterday, 5-4. Braves have scored 35 runs over the last four games. They take on the Blue Jays today to start a two-game series at SunTrust. First pitch coming up in about 21 minutes from right now. Mike Soroka gets the start today for the Braves. And Harper, as you and I talked about back earlier in the show, this is the start of the gauntlet for the Braves that I think will ultimately end up determining the National League East. You've got Toronto today and tomorrow. Then you got an off day Wednesday. Braves get the Washington Nationals at home for four. If you are a Braves fan and you can get there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, and I realize it's, you know, college football on the weekends, the Falcons play their first game Sunday. I get all that. But if you can get there to SunTrust this weekend and make as much noise as possible, because the Braves really need to take that series against the
Chris,
the Nationals.
Of the noise you make is like in your stomach when it's growling. Yeah. And that's not the type of noise. Is that good noise?
It depends on how loud it is.
Do you get up for the wave? If they do the wave around,
would you get up?
You hate the wave?
I absolutely hate the wave.
Do you do like the Billy Crystal movie? What was it, when Harry Met Sally? When he just kind of, he doesn't even get up and he just throws his hands in the air.
I've been guilty of that. But the Braves have four at home against the Nats, and then they get Philly in Philadelphia for four, and then three more in Washington before they come home for three against the Phillies. That takes us up to the 19th of September. By the 19th of September, this division race will be wrapped up one way or the other after the 19th.
Well, I'm not trying to put closure on the season, but you mentioned this homestand, right, with Toronto and with Washington. And then after that, there's only one more.
That's right.
They go on the road, right? You mentioned they go to Philly for, I think they have four in Philly and then three in Washington. And then they come home for the Phillies and then the Giants.
Yep.
And then that's it.
They
finish the season a week out in
Kansas City for a couple, and then New York.
And then they finish with the Mets.
That's right. That's right.
So if you haven't been there, you better get there.
Yeah, like I say, go make a whole bunch of noise for those Braves because I think they could use it. This weekend, it's a big, 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 big series coming up between the Braves and the Nationals. And again, that will start Thursday over at SunTrust Park. So make sure that you get out and make a little bit of noise for those Braves. We spent some time last hour with DJ Shockley. We talked about Georgia and that 30-6 win over Vanderbilt, 324 yards rushing on Saturday for the Dogs. That was a pretty good win for Georgia, but it was Georgia State that captured the weekend in college football. They've got everybody across the country talking about what the Panthers did as they go to Knoxville and knock off Tennessee. People are calling it the worst defeat in Tennessee history. Last time they lost to a non-Power 5 team was in 2008. They lost to Wyoming, and Philip Fulmer was fired the next day. Jeremy Pruitt did escape Sunday.
You know what didn't escape? I think I mentioned this to you, but we didn't do it on the air. And it goes like this. I'm going to read verbatim. The bad news for Tennessee started several hours before kickoff as a 42-foot cabin cruiser docked along the Tennessee River near Neyland Stadium caught fire at 7 a.m. and eventually sank. It's part of the Vol Navy.
Yeah.
And that wasn't good for them, right, to have that. But did you also know there was a quarterback reunion? Did you hear about this?
No.
At halftime, they gave, I think they put him in the Ring of Honor or may have retired his number for Jason Witten, former tight end there who went into the booth last year.
Now he's back on the field.
He's back on the field with the Dallas Cowboys, so congratulations to him. Our Sam Crenshaw noticed at game time. So this is pregame. He goes, there's a sighting of number 16 that was there. Peyton Manning attended the game. I'll read this verbatim. Former Tennessee quarterback and five-time NFL MVP Peyton Manning attended Saturday's game. Ryan Leaf, who was also a part of that initial draft class that Peyton, he did the game on ESPNU. Manning was the number one overall pick, and Leaf was taken second in the 1998 draft. We do not know if the two of them met at some Funny. Secret spot in a closet, you know, to shake hands or to greet one another. Evidently, they were seen chatting. So,
Ryan Leaf, a heck of a story, by the way. If you haven't seen it, I know somebody did a, I guess it's on ESPN. I don't know if it's one of those Sports Center featured things they do, which is kind of a longer form documentary, or maybe it's a 30 for 30 on that guy. I can't remember now. I haven't seen all of it yet, but I caught part of it. But I do know enough about his story, what that guy went through and the way he's turned his life around.
I think he has not only his master's, but maybe a doctorate in the School of Hard Knocks.
Oh, yeah.
Of learning a couple things.
You talk about learning the hard way.
Shouldn't have done that, or maybe I wish I had done it differently.
Hey, speaking of which, did you see the thing on ESPN a couple of weeks ago? I meant to text you and let you know that it was coming on. Did you see the thing a couple of weeks ago about Rocky Blyer? The old Steelers running back.
I know Rocky Blyer. And then I saw, was it on ESPN's site or Sports Illustrated? Someone was running a story on him.
Yeah,
about something. I don't know if he's going through some health issues. I don't know.
Well,
was that what it is?
No, they did a thing with him. Tom Rinaldi, of course, who I think is amazing. Tom Rinaldi was kind of the host of it and the narrator for it. But Rocky Blyer, for those that don't know, former Pittsburgh Steelers running back whose NFL career was interrupted for a couple of years. While he went and served in Vietnam, he was actually wounded in Vietnam, told he would never be able to play football again. He comes back, plays for the Steelers, and by the time he was gone, the Steelers, I think, drafted Terry Bradshaw, and they come back, and they're pretty good now. They win four Super Bowl titles, and Rocky Blyer was a part of that. He was Franco Harris's partner in that backfield for those Steelers teams. He went back to Vietnam.
That's what it was.
Yeah, they took him. He went back to Vietnam for the first time in 50 years and kind of told his story. I thought it was pretty good. It was only 30 minutes. I wished it would have been longer, but I thought it was pretty good.
Well, Tom Rinaldi, there's got to be some violins playing in the background or something
gosh.
Like that. Does he do a great job?
He is responsible for making more grown men cry than anybody else.
Steve Seif, who's the other guy that does the stories about the kid that, you know, just went through hell and back, and then now he's out playing high school football or something like that. There are some amazing stories out there that I'm glad they're telling. But Rocky doing that. Now, I've seen numerous Normandy Beach veterans, Utah Beach, folks that were there that stormed the beaches on D-Day that would go back, and those guys just lose it.
Right. Right.
For whatever reason. When they're by themselves and they think about what I was asked to do when I was 17, 18 years old, or, you know, the people that I saw, my friends that I lost and stuff.
The guys that didn't get to come home?
Yeah. And that there's so much healing that would allow, you know, from a wounded heart. A little bit of closure. Yeah. If Rocky was able to do that, then wow, God bless him. That's awesome that he was able to go back to Vietnam and just, you know, find whatever he needed to find there.
What's trending here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game? Chris Goforth, Harper LaBelle in for Andy and Randy on the Midday Show. Atlanta United, after winning the U.S. Open Cup, they dropped a 3-1 decision to Philly on Saturday. United now, they don't play again until September the 14th. That win by Philadelphia put them back into first by 1 point ahead of New York FC and 3 points ahead of Atlanta United. Coming down the stretch, 6 matches left for Atlanta United in the regular season. They get New York City in New York on September the 25th. That will be a huge one. Also, as everyone now knows by now, the Falcons have re-signed 44-year-old kicker Matt Bryant. Matt Bryant back with the Falcons again. 53-man roster has set, or was set, but as Tanitra told us about earlier today, the Falcons have been tinkering a bit. You know, I think Harper probably 1 through 49 on that roster are probably set. There's probably about four guys that are, or four spots on that roster that they're still trying to figure out exactly who they want on the 53-man and then who's going to the practice squad.
Yeah, there's still some finalization that will take place, and evidently, you know, the one player from another club that they've had their eye on for a while that may become available, may not, just depends. So it's pretty close. But you were mentioning to me off the air about an hour and a half ago, wasn't it, Matt Bryan, that had a tweet, or he said something about a couple of haters out there, maybe, but you know, he was grateful to the Falcons to bring him back.
Oh, I think everything that I saw, at least in social media, about the Falcons choosing to move on from Matt Bryant was nothing but negative towards the Falcons for doing that. I think this fan base definitely wanted to see Matt Bryant come back because of how clutch, how steady, and how consistent that he had been. And I think, you know, he kind of referenced that and said, hey, you know, appreciate all the support, and, you know, was very grateful for everybody that had reached out and kind of helped him move this thing forward. And now he's back in a Falcons uniform.
We still don't know if he's got fresh legs, and is he going to be kicking 55-yarders early in the season? Is 52 his limit? Is he going to be fantastic and all nails from the 30 to the 49? You know, we'll find out. But if there's anybody that's proven himself over the past, I'll say 8 years here, you know, as much as he has, we have a lot of Matts on the team. At least we did. We had all kinds of Matts. Matt Schaub, Matt Bryan, Matt Sims, Matt Bryant. If your name is Matt, there's room for you on the Falcons roster.
There's a spot for you. Falcons, by the way, currently have 7 wide receivers and 6 running backs on the roster. I would expect there to be another couple of cuts coming your way with that. Falcons did waive Ricky Ortiz today. I was a little shocked to see him on that 53-man when it came out yesterday, in order to waived him with an injury settlement to make room for Keith Smith. So the Falcons have signed Keith Smith, the fullback, former Raider fullback, been a couple of places in his career, but he is now an Atlanta Falcon. So that is a look at what is trending today on this Labor Day Monday. Chris Goforth, Harper LaBelle, in for Andy and Randy on the Midday Show here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Falcons open up the season on Sunday on the road against Minnesota. Pre-game will start at 11. Kickoff is at 1 o'clock. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, again, your exclusive home of the Atlanta Falcons. We talked about this earlier, Harper, and I don't know that we took a couple of calls. I don't know that we ever actually got to you necessarily, but what do you want to see? Granted, you want to see the Falcons win. I get that. Other than a win, what do you want to see from the Falcons in Minnesota week one?
You know, a couple years ago, Chris, when we were before the Super Bowl season, we'll just call it that, right? You know, the year they went to the Super Bowl, there was some talk, and I think there was a little bit of, really, did he say that? When Matt Ryan or Julio would mention, we're capable, you know, our goal right now is to score 28 points a ball game. We think we're capable of doing that. What a high number, a lofty number. And there were critics that would say that it was exactly that. I haven't heard that since. And you're going against the first two games against NFC opponents that you need to beat with Minnesota and Philadelphia that have really good defenses. Boy, it'd be really nice to see something like that. You better protect your quarterback. And I'm still not sure where our right tackle position is going to be. I listened to Dave Archer. He was on with Dukes and Bell a couple of days ago after the last preseason game. And Caleb McGarry may not be quite ready now, and we may not play him this week. And well, how is he going to get ready if he's not ready? It's only through playing. And he got to play against Jacksonville, and he admitted, hey, I was pretty gassed there at the end of that. Remember, he's going through a heart procedure.
Issue, right.
There's some things going on. But how do you get him in shape to be able to go if he's the guy? And Dave was impressed with his ability to push some folks around. Boy, I sure want him on the field on fourth and one or third and two, right? Even if he comes in as a tight end, I want him blocking because he's going to mash somebody. He's going to, you know, he's going to hurt you. That's what he's there to do. But I haven't seen enough of him, and I don't know if he's in game shape to be able to go. So do you start Ty Sombrello and then rotate him? That's normally a taboo in the NFL. You don't rotate your linemen. But I don't know how we're going to get him ready to go. If he's going to be the guy, we got to get him ready. I don't want to wait till Tennessee, game four. How are we going to get that done? That's a big question for me. And that's 20% of your offensive line right there and just that one guy. So, there's 100 things I need to, you know, be assured of that I haven't been from what I've seen in the preseason because I haven't seen Julio. I don't know what my combinations are going to be with Julio, Muhammad, and Calvin Ridley because no Julio out there. You know what I mean? I haven't seen Matt for a whole lot. I haven't seen Devontae at all. Those are some big issues. I think we have an offense from a specialty standpoint, guys that can touch the ball, that Matt can go to Hooper or anyone. We need four footballs out there. And one guy's going to be complaining that he doesn't have one. But we can't do any of it unless the offensive line pushes for our run plays and is able to protect Matt, which I didn't see a great protection scheme early in the preseason. Hopefully that'll get better.
As I told you earlier, mine is my key thing or what I want to see from the Falcons in week one is I want to see, and I know it sounds cliched, but I want to see them win the battle in the trenches, win the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball.
Are you going to do that against Minnesota's front seven?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Specifically, I think the offensive line. Now, the challenge is greater for the Falcons' offensive line because the Vikings, again, you've said it before, they're very good across that defensive front. Be able to run the ball, keep Matt Ryan upright, and I think good things happen if you can do that. Got to get Devontae Freeman back on track as well coming off of an injury. And then the Falcons' defensive line – put some pressure on the quarterback, stop the run. Minnesota was terrible last year running the ball. So I think this sets up well for the Falcons front seven to be able to have a pretty good day to kick off the season. Former Braves pitcher Marvin Freeman, he joins us next. We'll talk some Braves baseball with him as we continue. Chris Goforth, Harper LaBelle, in for Andy and Randy on the Midday Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth, Harper LaBelle, in for Andy and Randy on the Midday Show. And glad to be spending our Labor Day with you. Glad to head out on the Wade4.com hotline. Welcome in Marvin Freeman, a former Braves pitcher. Kind enough to give us some time, hang out with us for a little while on this Labor Day. So, Marvin, I've got a friend of mine who is a Colorado native. He's a big Rockies fan. He knew you were coming on today, and he said, listen, you have to ask Marvin Freeman the story about breaking an $80,000 violin bow. So what's the story with you and an $80,000 violin bow?
Well, you know, when I was in high school, I was a very talented craftsman, and I was a bow maker. And so the company that I worked for, they trusted me to put, you know, the hair that makes the actual strings vibrate, the horsetail. I had to rehair this bow, and it just so happens that this bow was 100 years old, and I was kind of nervous working on it to begin with, but when I actually broke the head off of it, I was super nervous because I thought not only was I going to lose my job, but I was going to jail or something after that. But thank God it was insured, and thankfully, you know, they actually restored it and sold the bow for actual profit. So I asked them, hey, you could break anything else? They said, no, you don't have to worry about that anymore. So it was a like the Stradivarius of violin bows. The bow was called a Turret, and it was over 100 years old, like I said. So I should have been working on it in the first place as a 17-year-old kid.
Did you have super glue or Gorilla Glue to help fix that? Or what do you
no,
do?
That was duct tape, right?
You know, we knew how to blend it from the actual sawdust to make it look more like it was grain as opposed to a crack. So we had our tricks of the trade.
Did you play violin?
I didn't play the violin, but I was I went to a vocational high school, and I was really good cabinet maker, and I ended up getting this job, started off as an apprentice program because I won the industrial arts fair. I made a roll top desk, and the guy that owned the bow shop saw some of the work that I did, and he hired me to kind of train and learn how to be a violin bow maker. And I was making like $30 an hour in high school. I thought it was a great, great job, man.
Do you still do that? Do you still like to work with wood and in your spare time?
The only time I work with wood is when I'm trying to break somebody's bat in BP. right now, I'm just not, I'm not into the woodworking. I'm trying to take these young pitchers and young baseball players and mold them into a viable instrument, something that they can use to make the team sound better and play better. So that's what my job is now, to help the youth.
Well, speaking of youth and your foundation and everything, you've got an event coming up. Tell us a little bit more about now, if I'm a bowler, where do I want to go?
Well, you can actually go on MarvinFreemanYouthFoundation.org and purchase yourself a ticket. Everything is tax deductible. It's a fundraising event for our foundation, which is geared on aiding young men and women that are from underserved communities in education and sports. We have a scholarship program that we try to at least give these kids some type of assistance when they get to college. And with the price of youth baseball nowadays, a lot of parents that have a income ceiling of under $50,000, we really trying to help in trying to aid in getting some of those kids an opportunity to play baseball at the highest level that they can while they're in high school and beyond. So that's what our mission is. We want to try and give everybody a fair chance to put their talents on the field and, you know, see what they can do.
When and where? Where would we go to participate? You have a fundraiser, don't you? Have a bowling tournament?
Yeah, the actual bowling event is September 26th. It's at Bolero in Kennesaw. And it's from 6:30 to 9, and we want everyone to come out and just at least lend their support and donate to our cause, and hopefully help some of these young men, get a chance to pursue some of their goals.
Marvin Freeman, former Braves pitcher, with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Marvin, you're a guy that you made that starter reliever transition a couple of times over the course of your career. We've seen that some with the Braves as they try to figure out where these young arms fit in, whether it's in the rotation or in the bullpen. How difficult is that to do, to make that switch either from starting to relieving or going from a reliever to a starter?
I think it's probably easier going from a reliever to a starter, because as a starter you have, the 4 days in between starts to kind of prepare yourself. As a reliever, you got to come to the ballpark with a mentality that you're an everyday player, because you don't know how many days in a row you're going to be used. So mentally, you can't take any days off. Although as a reliever, you can eliminate one pitch. If you got three good pitches, then you're going to have to make sure you got two really good ones. And so a lot of times guys come in out of the pen and they think they can just throw every pitch as hard as they can, when really later in the game the adrenaline is flowing. So it's only going to come down to more of a reaction when you're facing hitters. And if a hitter's seeing 95 all day, then it's not hard for him to hit that in the game situation. But, regardless of what position you're in, you still have to be able to pitch ahead in the count, and you still have to get your secondary pitches over the plate. So if you can do those two things, it shouldn't be a real hard transition mentally, but physically it's a little bit tougher to be a relief pitcher, because, you may pitch 4 days in a row, and as a starter you don't do that.
Marvin, you brought up a very interesting point. Earlier, gosh, it was probably a year ago, Greg McMichael, who was on the show, mentioned that when he was warming up, getting ready, he wanted to have his one pitch, the number one pitch, when he could throw that in the bullpen for strikes as he wanted to. When he had that type of control, he knew he was ready to go in. You mentioned a second and a third pitch. What was best for you? Did you have your one? Was it your fastball, your heater? Did that? What did you have that you needed to be ready to say to Bobby Cox or anybody, I am ready to go in the ballgame right now?
Well, for me, it was my slider. It was a pitch that I depended on, especially when I was behind in counts. If I knew hitters were coming up there aggressively trying to ambush that first pitch, I want to be able to get that over the plate. So I had to make sure that my slider was on point. My fastball was more of a sinking effect, and if it was sinking, then I really didn't pay too much attention to having to locate it in and out as long as it was going down. But my slider, I had to make sure that that pitch was over the plate because it sets up all of my other pitches. And like you said earlier, you want to have two good pitches, or you want to make sure your number one pitch is on point. And, you know, when I was facing righties, I was a fastball slider. When I was facing lefties, I was more fastball splitter. And a slider when I needed to get that that swing and miss pitch, so to speak. So really for me, if my slider was on, I felt like I was ready to go.
Marvin Freeman, former Braves pitcher with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. How important, Marvin, is the mental aspect of pitching, the mindset, especially for a young pitcher?
Oh, it's tremendous because sometimes, you know, if your confidence is up, then every pitch you pull out of your bag of tricks, you feel like it's going to work. If your confidence is waning a little bit, or you had a couple bad outings and you start doubting yourself, it's only going to take away from the actual effort that you put into a pitch. Sometimes you may put too much effort or sometimes not enough because of that lack of confidence. But the main thing is trying to stay on an even keel and not get too emotionally high or low. And like I said, try and make the best pitch that you can make at that particular time. And if that pitch is not good, you got to wipe out that memory and then try and make sure that the next pitch is the best pitch that you're going to throw. So staying in the moment and being a little bit more concerned with what you do right then is an easier way to approach it than, you know, dreading the fact that you can't get one pitch over and then now you're scuffling trying to find something that works. You got to be mentally tough.
You were part of a Braves team, and there were a couple of Hall of Famers. A couple of Hall of Famers on that pitching staff, and Maddox and Glavine and Smoltz. You were a guy that had the reputation of keeping things light in the clubhouse, if you will. What was the dynamic like? Take us back to the early to mid-90s, your time with the Braves. What was the dynamics like in that clubhouse?
Oh, that was probably the best clubhouse that I've ever been a part of. There was no cliques where you had the elites hanging out in the corner and the rookies over in another corner. Everybody kind of mingled around and everybody kind of gave each other the same mutual respect. And we all pulled for each other. I played in clubhouses where guys were actually rooting against you because it would make them look better. So it was definitely a family-type situation, and it showed on the field. That's why we had so many guys contribute late in games that weren't really, you know, maybe superstars, but they were good major league ball players, and everybody knew what their role was. And Bobby made sure that, you know, we as players went out there and went hard every day. And if you're going hard every day and you know, you're going on the field with the intent to win, then you got good things that's going to happen for you.
Well, I know that Maddox had a way of doing things. Was there any prank or trick that you could do repeatedly that you can tell on the air? Of course, that's important. That would work, especially, you know, stuff that would keep the mood light. It seemed like everybody was pretty good at, you know, kind of ribbing each other in just the right way, where it wasn't mean or malicious, but it was intended to keep everything loose.
Well, you know, I wasn't like a prankster. I didn't run around lighting people's shoestrings on fire and pulling chairs out from under people. I think of my humor as more of playing off what's going on. If a guy had went out and missed a base the day before, rounding second, and it cost us, you know, a ball game or something, I would probably have 15 bases in his locker the next day. just something like that, just so he can get a message from actually the point we're trying to get across, but with a little humor added to it.
Marvin, as we wrap things up, tell folks again about what you've got going on September the 26th out in Kennesaw.
Okay, we have a Celebrity Bowl. We got former Braves players coming out to bowl with our young men and women and raise money for the Marvin Freeman Youth Foundation's educational program. It's from 6:30 to 9. It's at Bolero in Kennesaw on Thursday, September 26th. We hope that everyone that's going to be available can come out and support us and give us a little bit of opportunity to make a change in the community and just spread our love.
Marvin, I hate we've ran out of time, man, but appreciate you giving us a few minutes here on Labor Day.
I appreciate you guys having me, and I'm available anytime.
We'll do it again. Marvin Freeman, former Braves pitcher.
Thanks, Marvin.
He's been with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And I wanted to ask him about pitching in Denver. You know, he was a Rocky for a while. I wanted to ask him about the idea that's, you know, did pitching in that altitude, did it really mess with you as a pitcher? Was it a mental thing, or is there something really to that? Because, you know, he was fourth. He was fourth in the Cy Young voting one year as a Rocky. So, anyway, we'll come back. What did we miss? That's next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth, Harper LaBelle in for Andy and Randy on this Labor Day. Final segment for us.
Well, Caleb just did a sports flash, and he's wearing his Georgia State Panthers hat.
Had
he's
to. Got a man after
Nike,
your own heart.
Royal blue.
I'm surprised he didn't buy your practice jersey off eBay.
No one wants that. Yeah, Chris, come on. They got to wait for that to go on sale. You're wearing your Nike blue, and there's a little bit of black, white shoes. Are you wearing your Panther Cheetah Speedo underwear underneath that, too?
Because I think you are. No, and you have to be careful because, it's supposed to be Under Armour. I know everything's Under Armour with Georgia State now, but I still have my stuff from back in the Nike day.
You were up there.
Yep.
I listened to you when I got home. On the you were with Thomas Mott, weren't you?
I was.
Yeah, and you know, your initial thoughts and whatever. My one question to you is, when did you feel comfortable that the Panthers weren't going to be like other Panthers and they're going to somehow or another take, you know, snatch defeat from the jaws of victory? You know what I'm kind of teasing with you, but there was just a different buzz in there that in that stadium and what the guys were doing. They weren't jumping around. They weren't having a great. It wasn't done yet. They waited till after the 60-minute, till the clock struck zero before they just we did this thing. What for you was a telltale moment that this is not going to be a good day for the Volunteers?
So I have to be honest with you. I'm an Atlanta sports fan, and I've experienced too many times getting excited, making plans, thinking this is it, only to see disappointment. So it took Dan Ellington's 22-yard run to go up. That was the final score for the Panthers.
38-23 when he scored.
Yeah. Yeah, so when he goes in the end zone, wait. I think the Panthers got a field goal after that.
So it was 35-23.
I think 35-23 was where it was for me that I saw with the time left on the clock that, okay, this is real. Because I had people on Twitter start of the fourth quarter that were like, going crazy. This is it. We did it. And I'm just like, look, you got 15 minutes. There's a lot of football yet to be played. And this is still an Atlanta team. Let's be honest about it. And so, yeah, at that point, it made sense to me. And even still at the end, Tennessee goes down and scores a touchdown. And there's still like a slight chance. And then how Atlanta is it that you have a kickoff with, 2 seconds left, and the officials come out and they say, no, there's 1 second still on the clock. We have one final down left to play. That it was kind of like, oh, do I have to watch? I still have to watch this because I'm just still not comfortable. But, yeah, I really think it was the Ellington run.
And, Chris, just for your information, we had Georgia State had a delay game penalty from that 1 second because it took so long to figure out what we're going to do. The victory play, they probably hadn't worked on it all that much, but they talked too long about it, and so even that was postponing the inevitable.
Well, because I think I really appreciate what Coach Ellie is doing over there. He's just a really classy guy, and he's trying to raise a team that's extremely classy. And I think even in that moment, it was like, all right, let's go out here. We're going to run an official play. We're not, it's not a bunch of let's pump up the crowd as we walk up here to this final play. Like, they were, very official and, one final play and we're out. And then the celebration comes and the Gatorade bath and everything. And how about that for Coach Elliott's post-game comments? Giving a little jab to the SEC that it just meant more for us tonight. I don't know. I absolutely loved Coach Elliott, and and have been really surprised from what I saw last year. Because, you know, to be honest, I didn't think this season was headed in such a great direction. But who knows now?
Yeah, we talked about it back during the summer, Harper, that, you know, what was this team going to look like and how good could they be and what was the ceiling going to be like? And coming off the year they had last year, I don't know that anybody looked at it and had – I don't know that anybody's forecast was necessarily all that rosy. Now, I think everything changes now.
Well, I can tell you there is one man who was very optimistic about this season, and I want to give him a shout-out. Is the assistant athletic director, Mike Holmes, who I texted earlier in the week because I wanted to know what the official monetary value was going to be on what Georgia State was going to receive from Tennessee. And he sent me a text that said $950,000 and an L for Tennessee. And he was right on point. And I had to ask him after the game. I was like, can I screenshot this? I need to post this because this is just – I mean, he spoke it into an existence, and it worked out.
$950,000 to get pushed around like that.
And it's not the first time for Tennessee to have to pay an opponent to get spanked.
No, they did it with Wyoming a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen much. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
and,
very true.
That's what makes it even more special. But, you know, the program and everything that they've been through, and, you know, with Dave Cohen and Sam Crenshaw and our, you know, togetherness that we've had over the past 10
years. Well, you guys live
and
die with it. I mean, for 10 years, you guys have, your job is a lot more fun when they win, is it not? I mean, going to a bowl game was fun, right? I mean, that's what you want to do is you want to see those guys win. You may not have necessarily sweat equity involved in it, but when you're involved at the level you guys are week in and week out, you want to see those guys do well. You can't, there's no way anybody can listen to Dave call football or basketball, either one there, and you know pretty quick which side of the fence he's on.
Yeah. Well, I feel from the time that I was given even the smallest role, I want the game to be better. I like the fact that there's 90 more kids just down the road here at Georgia State. There's another 90 in Kennesaw, right? Mercer, the program itself. There's so many good high school players in this area, and we've talked about, you know, we teased that Tennessee really has 25 high school all-stars from the state of Georgia. Alabama's been picking kids up here from ever, and you name any school, there's a breeding ground here where you can find talent in the state of Georgia. And I like seeing that some of the kids want to stay here. But the empty stadium, the Georgia Dome experience, all that kind of stuff, that was tough. And I'm just so happy for the program that it's gotten to a different place because of this, instead of the same old, same old. Now, if they fall over themselves and lose to Furman, that's not going to help at all. But I'm just saying the confidence that you need with the talent that you have is really increasing here.
So Georgia State Stadium, and this is for both you guys, Georgia State Stadium, Saturday night, 7 o'clock for Furman, is what? How what will that be like? What will the reception be like for those guys Saturday night when they run on the field?
I will tell you the same thing that I told Thomas Mott on Saturday night, and it is something that a lot of people in this position don't like to say. I don't know. Because honestly, we didn't expect this out of Tennessee. I kind of foresaw a bit of another rough season for the Panthers, and attendance has always been an issue. And even though I know, you know, the guys over there at Georgia State Athletics are doing a lot to get, you know, butts into seats and for people to cheer for the team, I think there will be a bigger interest on Saturday, but I don't know. I honestly don't know. It should be a win for the Panthers. I mean, it should, but I don't know.
No one knows, right? I'm not there now. I don't know what the season ticket request has been like, you know, because today's technically a day off. We'll find out
right.
A little bit more, but I think there's going to be so much more interest on the way back. I was in with Mike in the van coming back, and the amount of Twitter, the amount of Facebook, the amount of connectivity that you have in social media was off the chart. They were breaking records from about the middle of the fourth quarter on. So that's the good news, and that's the way the game is being played right now. Oregon, I think, is the leader in terms of how they've been able to really connect their football program with the world. You know, what are they going to be wearing on Saturday? They have different ways of broadcasting their news about their team. All schools are doing it now, but I think Georgia State's ability to catch up and be a significant part of that will change from here on out.
Caleb, thanks, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys.
Harper and I back to wrap it up next. We'll get you ready. John Chuckery, Rob Tribble coming up later. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.